member owner of Hunger Mountain Co-op since 1996.
All right, Paul Reardon, right on. You guessed correctly. 1993, last year, the Sox and the Yankees, neither one of them made the playoffs. Man, that's a long time. All right, you'll be getting a half-pound bag of Vermont Coffee Company coffee at some point here. We go to the phone. Scott Mill, good morning, Scott. Good morning, Scott. All right, I think we got a bad connection here. Let's try that one more time here. Scott, good morning. All right. Give us a ring back if you get into a better cell spot. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Let me take a moment of your time to tell you about our fabulous friends in the Lake Champlain Islands at Shore Acres Inn and Restaurant. If you're looking for a great fine dining experience, maybe you're celebrating an anniversary. Maybe you're celebrating a birthday. Maybe you're celebrating another special event. Maybe somebody made a documentary movie about you. You want to head on up and see our friends at Shore Acres Inn and Restaurant. It's a great place to celebrate an event. It's also just a great place to go for a nice evening out in the Champlain Islands. 23 gorgeous rooms right there at this beautiful resort. All really nicely decorated, all with great views of Lake Champlain and all the sounds that you can imagine that you will get as well, too, with the waves lapping up on the shore as you drift off to sleep and then wake up in the morning. And again, we encourage you to give them a call if you want to make reservations to stay up there for a few days, 372-8722. That's 372-8722, Shore Acres Inn and Restaurant. In beautiful North Hero, Vermont, just a short drive, but another world away. All right, let's try this again. Scott Mill, good morning. How are you today?
Good, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Phone connection's okay?
Phone connection sounds great.
Awesome. Well, I'm unfortunately, with many Vermonters, I guess I'm batting 300 on being able to make cell phone calls, at least the last couple of weeks. Had a good time.
All right. I'm starting to lose you a little bit of hair again. Was there a comment you wanted to make this morning, something you wanted to talk about?
Yep. I thought that I very much appreciated the debate with you on Saturday. Thank you for that. I enjoyed listening to Eric Davis, although what I thought, and I missed the first couple minutes if you did ask him, but what I thought was interesting was, you know, 10 days ago Eric Davis was pontificating that Scott Milne's not going to get 30% of the vote. Now this week he's pontificating that Scott Milne's going to get maybe 42% of the vote, all the while pontificating that Scott Milne's running a terrible campaign with no ideas. So it seems to me there's a disconnect there. Did you ask him about that, and did I miss it, or what do you think the answer is to that?
I didn't ask him about that, and I think his answer to that has more to do with some of the problems that he talked about that Shumlin has been having, including with the healthcare website. He feels as though the economy, too, is not doing as well as it might be. He also talked about issues of transparency. So he seemed to be laying this more on problems that Shumlin was having than anything significantly positive that you've done.
Well, that explains him maybe downgrading Shumlin from the mid-50s, which he was 10 days ago, to below 50 possibly now. But I don't believe that, Mark. I mean, I think you need, when you're bringing people on the air that influence people with tenured professorships from elite institutions, you need to ask them tough questions and bring out the contradictions in what they've said. If you look back on Mr. Davis's track record of picking things in Vermont over the last few elections, it's not stellar. And I think it's a form of, journalistic malpractice to just let him get away with saying some of those things. I've got a campaign. I'm talking to people all the time that very much believe that we have a campaign of ideas. The fact that we have a strategy that many people in the media don't buy into about when we're going to talk about specifically about ideas, I think is a good thing. But to call us a campaign with no ideas when we've been very clear what our strategy is, A, is not fair, and B, I think when you have somebody like Mr. Davis, who's respected and has got a rich history in Vermont, coming on 1 week and saying a candidate's not going to get 30% of the vote, and basically he's laughing at me. A week later, when a poll comes out, all of a sudden he's going to get 42%. There's no other tangible reason about anything other than he's still running a bad campaign. To me, it means that you got to question the source of the thing and get a different point of view on. So that's the point I'd like to make. Our campaign is going the way I want it to go. We got a late start. We're learning a lot as we're going along. We're listening to Vermonters before we talk. We're doing the things that I promised I would do when I started this campaign. And having folks like Eric Davis come on and pontificate about opinions like they're facts is not helpful. It's an opinion, and I think you got to hold him to account that it's his opinion, and he doesn't really have factual basis for a lot of what he's saying.
Well, I think it's very clear to people, Scott, that it's an opinion. And in terms of the contradictions, I just explained to you what his reasoning was on why Shumlin's numbers have gone down.
But that didn't happen in 7 days, Mark.
Well, the website just went down this week. He's talking about some economic numbers that have come out. He's talking about the issue of transparency. We've now had a debate. People are now getting engaged. I think it's a pretty significant two-week period here we're talking about.
Yes, I don't want to argue with you about it. I think the website coming down preceded his change in numbers. Writing somebody off as not being able to get 30% of the vote, and then a week later saying they're going to get 42% of the vote, needs a better explanation. He's still running a terrible campaign, and I still know exactly what I'm talking about, Vermonters, when I'm telling you how this election's going to come out, which is pretty much what Eric Davis just said.
In terms of when you're going to come out with proposals, you say that this is a strategy that you're doing. Why are you waiting in terms of coming out with proposals, Scott?
I came out very specifically, Mark, early on with principles and priorities upon which the campaign is founded and upon which we'll govern Vermont. And I think if you look at our website, those are pretty good guiding principles. But I think your question's a good one. You know, the most important thing to do if you want to be a good governor is to get elected. People that have run against Governor Shumlin in the past have had a strategy exactly what, Mr. Davis just talked about. Have a press conference and come up with some other sort of, whether it's a real good or maybe it's just an okay or maybe it's a bad idea, but come up with a new idea every day. Get the press to come, say your name in the news media so you get increased name ID. And then, just talk about a new idea when the other one has holes in it. That's the old way of campaigning, as is, spending $20,000 a day on TV commercials, which is what the Shumlin administration started this week. I think Vermonters are smart. They want somebody that's going to think before they talk. They want somebody that's going to be listening to them as they're coming up with things and not be saying things before they get elected that they're not going to be doing after they get elected. So our principles and priorities, I believe, Mark, are pretty good and well thought out. They're true to what I believe. Our strategy for getting elected is not to call a press conference and come up with some new gimmick every day to get the press to talk about. Our strategy to get elected, I said from the beginning, if Howard Dean were governor, I would not be running. I'm running because, in spite of all the very good things about Peter Shumlin, and in spite of all the laudable accomplishments in his life, I very much believe that he's a bad governor. I believe Vermont is headed in a bad direction. I believe that two more years with Peter Shumlin as governor is going to be very bad for Vermont, for our parents, for my children, for everybody. So that's why I'm drawn into this race. And to talk about my ideas and to give Governor Shumlin something to talk about other than defending his record before people are even paying attention to the campaign is not part of our strategy. So I promise you we're running a campaign of ideas. The cap idea that we talked about on Saturday, which you and your guests, you were, kicking it around on Monday, didn't even understand when you were kicking it around, I think is a very good idea. Came from the people. It didn't come from somebody around the country I was talking to try to sell it to Vermonters. I heard it on Main Streets while I was traveling around. We've got other good ideas we'll be talking about over the next couple of weeks, but maybe we'll be doing press conferences. Maybe we'll continue to spring them in debates. But we've got a pretty good strategy, and it's continuously improving as we go forward.
Okay. What didn't I and my guest understand about the property tax cap proposal? Tell me how it would work then.
The property tax proposal is basically the tax commissioner who works for Governor Shumlin is going to come out on November 15th with a and there's some sort of behind the curtains, magic to the process of how they actually come up with, here's what we're going to suggest is an increase in the statewide property tax next year. What I am encouraging the governor to do is to direct the tax commissioner to have the next year's statewide educational property tax to be exactly the same as this year. So there's still going to be some, you know, based on common level of appraisal and all these other complexities, you know, local spending, all these other complexities that go into this very complex formula for how we fund education. One thing that will be predictable, the statewide education property tax will be flat next year. What that's going to do is put, and what the total design of this is to do what the Shumlin administration did not do this year. I'm not going to be coming into the governor's office unless things change dramatically with approval ratings in the 60s, which is what Governor Shumlin came into the last session with. Comes into office with approval ratings in the 60s with huge majorities in both houses and didn't do anything on property tax reform. That's one of the reasons I'm running for governor. What this proposal is going to do is engage local select boards, local city councils, local people into getting their legislators on the record before the election whether they're going to support the Milne proposal for the cap while we work things out. If legislators are on the record and that's part of their process for getting elected, I think that's going to put a lot of pressure on the legislature and the governor. Hopefully I'll be governor, but I've also reached out to Governor Shumlin and asked him to join me in this because I think it's just a good way from the grassroots up to get the legislature to pay attention and stick their necks out and do some tough work because it's going to be a really tough thing to get this education school
if you
property.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I'm good, Mark. Thank you.
If you cap the statewide property tax number, isn't there going to be pressure to increase the local share?
If you cap the statewide property tax, about 60, you know, essentially, you know, it's a very complex system, which you probably understand, admittedly, Mark, you probably understand better than I do, but it's a very complex system. About 65% of the money that funds education actually comes from property taxes. The rest, you know, comes back. For, you know, you send all your money to Montpelier, it comes back. They kind of convince everybody into being thinking you're a receiving town, even though that's not true. If you cap the statewide property tax, what it's going to force the legislature to do is to come up with extra money to fund education. So they're going to do that from some other tax, or they're going to need to control the growth of spending in other parts of government to do that, either one of which will be good. But the intent of the idea is to force the legislature to do the to encourage the legislature and the legislators to do the tough work of getting engaged into figuring out how to come up with a system where we don't have towns like up in the Grand Isle with huge double-digit increases and relatively flat spending and, you know, all these other just nuances around where it doesn't make sense what the relationship is between local spending and the tax rate.
If the legislature gets that money for education spending from another tax, what's been accomplished?
That folks that are leaving Vermont because they don't have predictability in property taxes have 2 years to go. Maybe we'll give Scott Milne and the legislature a chance to figure this out before we move out of state.
Mm-hmm. So they're not just going to be paying some other way?
They very well might be paying some other way if the legislature can't figure out a way of doing it without raising an income tax or doing something like that. But I think that's going to be another big opportunity for folks to look seriously at what's really going on under the hood of state government and not get all these confusing things that, you know, you've got a governor that can run around and say, hey, we got the second lowest unemployment rate in the nation. Everything's great. That's the number that counts. Well, you know, we saw yesterday, that's not the number that counts. There's 3,000 more people living under the level of the federal guideline per poverty in Vermont this year than there was last year. The average median household income in Vermont, I think, is down 2% in 2013 over the previous year. So that's not a sign of an economy that's booming. That's not a sign of an economy that's going to be able to afford a good education system going forward. It's not, you know, we've got all these things that are, you know, why do we need a good economy so we can have a good government? Why do we need a good government so we can have a good economy? We had a downward cycle on both of them right now, and I think it's time to take a serious look at more balance in Montpelier. And I've got an insurgent campaign without a lot of money. There's a lot of things you can criticize about my campaign, but I don't think the guest you had on earlier today has credibility or a track record for being accurate.
Why do you say that?
10 days ago, he was saying Scott Milne's basically laughable. He's not going to get 30% of the vote. This week, he's saying Scott Milne's laughable. He might get 42% of the vote. That's a pretty big swing in 1 week, and it's not because the governor pulled the plug on Vermont Health Connect. It's because the under 30 number was inaccurate. You know, and I don't want to turn this into an Eric Davis thing, but, you know, I launched my announced I was going to run on June 12th. I'm on two TV stations talking about it. I'm talking to you about it on your station. I'm talking to other radio people about it. It's in statewide newspaper stories. you know, he's allegedly doing homework before he talks about things. He comes on the Vermont Public Radio on Friday after I've talked to you and announced I'm running and sitting in your studio doing it. He comes on Vermont Public Radio and says, you know, Scott Milne's still out of the country. He's not a serious candidate. So if he can't do homework and do a Google search before he goes and talks on a statewide public radio program about somebody that's running for governor, I think Vermont press people ought to seriously go, is this the guy that we should be going to for expert advice? That's a fact, Mark. He did that, and that's pretty much the same thing he's been doing all along, same thing he did to Ryan Doobie, and I don't want to turn it into an Eric Davis complaint, but I think people like you got to sort of pay attention and decide whether there's somebody else that at least needs to come on and balance what he says, because he says a lot of things that are opinions that I disagree with, which is fair, but he says a lot of things that are facts that are wrong.
Well, believe me, if you'd been in the country and he'd said you're out of the country, I think I would have caught that.
Well, go listen to his, you know, it's on the BPR site.
Okay, I can't do much about when somebody's on VPR. I can control what I ask when they're on this program, but, you know, I'll let Jane and Bob deal with their own program.
But my point is, I think a good question is, well, Milne's running such a terrible campaign, and you said he was going to do less than 30% in the vote. You know what the difference is, I think, is a poll came out that said I was going to get 35% of the vote. 4 hours after he said I was a big loser and I was going to get less than 30% of the vote. So that's what the change was. But somebody in the media should ask him, you know, well, if Scott Milne's running such a terrible campaign, Eric, and you know so much, how do you go from, you know, basically in 4 days or 6 days or whatever it was, from you basically assuring us that he was going to have less than 30% of the vote, to now all of a sudden he might get 42% of the vote, but, you know, the third-party guys are going to take 10 and, you know, all this other stuff. Our campaign is going. We got a lot of momentum going. It's an uphill climb. What I need are people that want change and more balance in Montpelier to be naive enough to believe that they can make a difference by voting. And having people like Eric Davis that don't think that, there's a lot of people like that, but somebody like you giving him a microphone week after week when he's got a track record that he has of saying things that are factually inaccurate, and I believe, and this is just my opinion, but I believe he purports an awful lot of opinions like they're facts, and you let him get away with it, and I don't think that's fair.
All right. Listen, if that's what you believe, I will take the criticism.
And I appreciate your help.
In terms of... I know you feel that I've been unfairly critical of you for the lack of money that you've raised in this campaign. And I understand and appreciate as much as anybody that, you know, we have incumbents who have too much money and it's a difficult road to hoe for travelers, for challengers. But if you know, in terms of your priorities and your ideas, if you don't have any money to get them out, isn't it like a tree falling in the woods?
No, Mark, I apologize if I said you've been unfair. I don't think you've been unfair in your criticism. I think you've been a lot more articulate in your criticism than some people have. But what I thought was hypocritical a little bit was, you know, and again, to point out part of what's wrong with Vermont, I'm calling you from Interstate 89 and unable to get a cell connection the last time I called in. Yeah, Peter Welch on, you were talking to him about campaign finance. To me, you should ask him the tough question. You know, is it true as a freshman Democratic congressman that if you don't spend 3 hours a day making phone calls for money from an office at the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee where somebody's watching you, you basically don't get the support of the National Party for re-election? That's my understanding, more or less, how that works. So you got Peter Welch on, you're talking about money, you asked him some pretty good questions about money. But you really didn't get into, you know, what's wrong with the system? How does this all work? And all this stuff. And then I come on, and granted, we had a bad cell connection. We couldn't finish the conversation. But your first question to me is almost like, why aren't you raising money? Well, if Peter Welch is, and he's a friend of mine, and I have a lot of respect for him, but if the way the whole system is set up is, as a congressman, you got to, once you're elected, you still got to be dialing for dollars every day of the week, or you lose the faith of your party. You don't get leadership positions. And then you got a, you know, somebody coming out of nowhere like me running for governor, trying to make a difference in Vermont. You're hammering me for not having money. You know, which way is it? It's a complicated system. I'm more interested in ideas than I am in money. I appreciate the caller that called in while I was waiting to get a cell service so I could call into you that said, you know, well, if you believe in something, you know, you'll go do it. Well, I believe in my private business. I believe in my family. I've done a great job of building those things. I am uncomfortable with this gray area between calling people and asking them for money to support a public policy campaign and feeling 100% like afterwards I don't own something. When I ask somebody to do business with my private business, I own something, which is great service, responsiveness to their questions, and doing whatever I can to be, you know, as long as it's ethical, doing whatever I can for them. When you're governor, I don't know that I got a lot of friends that I haven't called for money. I don't, if they want to give me money, it's great, but I'm uncomfortable calling people and asking them for money when I'm going to be governor, and it just seems to be a gray area to me. And, you know, another, you know, opinion, which I think people like you and some other people have let your previous guests get away with articulating like it's a fact, is Milne's campaign is running on fumes. Unless he's talking to my bank and they're telling him how much money I have, he has absolutely no way of saying that.
Well, I think his indication might be that there doesn't seem to be any presence you have out there. So is he wrong? I mean, do you have a lot of money at the bank at this point?
I came out on Monday and said I have five paid staff people, so I don't think you do that with no money, do you?
No, I don't think you do.
Right. So I think that's I don't think, you know, I think we've got a strategy. And granted, it's not perfect. And, you know, I'm going to make mistakes later today and tomorrow and every day over the next 47 days or 46 days, whatever we got till election day. But I think our strategy is, you know, we're running an insurgent campaign. We know, you know, we're going to use our lack of money as best we're able to as an asset. I think if you look at, again, polls are going to go up and down. I think all this money that Governor Shulman is spending on advertising early is an indication that he's got pretty good polling, too, that shows that we're doing much better than people thought we were, and he's much weaker than he hoped he would be. So money's not going to be the answer to this. I think our answer is talking to Vermonters and being organized and making sure we get a message that resonates when people start paying attention, and people are just starting to pay attention right now, in my opinion.
If I have Eric Davis on next week and he says you're going to get 52%, having gone up from 42% this week and 32% the week before, are you still going to think he's not credible?
He said I was going to be under 30 the week before, just for clarification.
Okay.
I think if he's saying that as in its opinion, and it's clear that that's an opinion, and if he had some data to back it up, it would be better than just coming on and saying, you know, I just find, you know, and I think that VPR story where it's Friday of a week where I started on Monday on your show talking about, you know, the campaign, and then I'm sitting in your studio, and then it's 4 days later, and allegedly people do their homework before they go talk on your show or any show, saying I'm still out of the country, is an indication that he's not as credible as I think he should be for the weight he gets in the media in Vermont. And granted, maybe there's you know, not a deep bench for people like that, but you know, I've been disagreeing with a good majority of what I've been hearing him say for several years, and now that I'm in his crosshairs, it makes it a little bit more important to me to talk about why I don't think he's credible.
Thank you for your time this morning.
Always a pleasure, Mark. Thank you very much.
Scott Milne is the Republican candidate for governor. Moment of your time for our friends at the Vermont Coffee Company. It is coffee roasted for friends. If you're looking for an outstanding blend to start your day, you might want to try the dark roast. They also have a nice mild roast and a decaffeinated blend, too. Make it Vermont Coffee Company coffee. It is coffee roasted for friends. You can find it at your favorite local independent grocery store, your favorite local co-op, and you can always purchase it online, too, at VermontCoffeeCompany.com. And again, a reminder, if you want to send it to your friends and relatives out of town, you want to go to that website, VermontCoffeeCompany.com. All right, let's take Fred's call in Moncton Ridge. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. I was going to make a comment before, but I got the wind was changed in the sail there, so I don't think he's going to make it. I think that if Eric Davis can get under his skin like that quick, he picked up the phone. I just don't think he's a legitimate candidate. I don't think he's got the sack or the chutzpah to run against Peter. I just don't see it. I watch a lot of people in my life, and he's just doesn't look like he's that his heart's in it or something. I don't know, but and I think you know, 2 or 3, 4 points. It doesn't matter what it is. Someone's going to win. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
All right, thanks for
and your. I could not understand why he was coming at you. I mean, are you supposed to be fair and balanced now? You're going to be like Fox? You know what I'm saying? I didn't get that at all. No. Good luck.
Thanks for your call. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. We'll take a quick break back after this.
The top drivers of the American Canadian Tour roll into New Hampshire Motor Speedway Saturday for the Bond Auto ACT Invitational. Late model stars Joey Pohl, Patrick LaPerle, Brian Hoare, and Nick Sweet headline a field of 43 cars and stars ready to battle for the checkers at the Magic Mile. Join us for live coverage of the 6th annual Bond Auto ACT Invitational Saturday afternoon at 4:15 on your racing station, WDEV FM and AM, streaming live at WDEVradio.com.
Looking for a cost-effective way to get your message and image before the public?
This is Brian at Always On Time Signs and Designs. We make attractive, well-designed signage in a variety of forms.
This is Rory with in-house sign design for everything from traditional business signs to vehicle lettering and even full vehicle wraps. Your image will be seen and remembered by thousands.
The variety we offer with fast turnaround is limited only by your imagination. Banners, in-store floor and window graphics, and even special event items like trade show tables.
Bring your ideas to us. Whatever your budget is, we can help you accomplish your marketing goals at Always On Time Signs and Designs.
Your order will be done on time, on budget, every time. Call us at 223-8948 or toll free from anywhere at 1-800-547-0808.
Always On Time Signs and Designs, 115 Industrial Lane, Berlin.
Again, we can be reached at 223-8948 or 1-800-547-0808.
Hi, Todd Stone from G Stone Motors.
And I'm Travis.
Hey, you know what I was thinking, Todd?
Oh boy, what now?
Well, look at this amazing lineup of Ford vehicles. Styling, fuel economy, power, they have it all.
Yeah, but GMC does too. They have great new styling, and the new Sierra is really classy.
Oh, really? Ford's been the number one selling truck for over 40 years. Top that.
The all-new GMC Sierra was just voted number one best buy. But I don't know why we're arguing about this.
Good question. We have both GMC and Ford here on our lot, and that's a huge time saver for our customers.
Customers can come and look at our huge inventory of new Fords, GMCs, and great lineup of pre-owned used vehicles.
Whether it's fuel economy, durability, or luxury that you're looking for, we have what you need.
And remember, we take anything in trade. View our full inventory online at gstonemotors.com, and don't forget to like us on Facebook.
Also, don't forget our sister store, G-Stone Commercial, for all of your truck, trailer, and equipment needs. Service, parts, sales, and rentals, they do it all.
G-Stone Motors, your hometown Ford and GMC dealer where they take anything in trade. Route 7 in Middlebury or online at gstonemotors.com.
Looking to buy a car, motorcycle, or boat? Maybe you'd like to refinance your existing vehicle. Granite Hills Credit Union can help with a great fixed rate of 2.49% for 60 months for a new or used vehicle. We've got money to lend right now at this unbelievable low rate. Not a member of Granite Hills? Not a problem. We're open to anyone who lives or works in Washington or Orange counties. Act now before our loan special is gone. This low rate of 2.49% for a car, motorcycle, or boat won't last forever. And remember, we can help you refinance your existing vehicle too. Apply online at granitehills.org or call today to take advantage of low loan rates from Granite Hills, your hometown credit union.
At Granite Hills Credit Union, the difference is you.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
Coming up Monday, I'll be down at Norwich University, a cybersecurity conference. Tuesday at the State House, we're going to talk about the future of the digital economy. Set up to St. Albans. Dick, how you doing this morning?
Hi, good morning, Mark. Well, I was listening to our candidate for governor there. And after listening to that and the track record of the current administration, I pretty much made up my mind that I'm not investing any money in this state, not doing any capital investments on private property because they don't understand private property rights. And what I'll do is figure out just how much and calculate how much money I've got to have every year to pay off this mob in order to keep what I've got. And maybe in 5 or 10 years, If I take that strategy, my children may be able to come back to this state if things change. But as I see it right now, this place is dead in the water.
Thanks for your call. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Moment of your time for our friends right down the road at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery. A great place to go for lunch. Great place to stop first thing in the morning. They open the doors at 7 a.m., 8 on Sundays. Why not pick up some tasty treats for the family this weekend? Maybe pick up a few on Monday morning for your office mates. Nice way to start the week. And you can always stop in there. They're beautiful cafe. Free Wi-Fi where you're hanging out there. Those fabulous whoopie pie ice cream sandwiches and some of the best cookies you will have in your life. Red Hen Cafe and Bakery. It's right off of Interstate 89, Exit 9 in Middlesex. And we always appreciate when you head on down to our sponsors, places like Red Hen, that you say howdy from us here at WDEV. Again, it's right off of Interstate 89, Exit 9 in Middlesex, right there on Route 2 is where you will find Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, right at the Camp Mead property. You can't miss it. Newly renovated building there, too. Looks really super great. So check it out. And that's Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, right off of Interstate 89, Exit 9 in Middlesex. Our friends at Jet Service Envelope would also love to hear from you, too, if you have any printing needs. They can make them magically happen for you. You do need to provide content. That is not one thing that they will do for you. But they will expertly print whatever it is that you need. Trifold brochures, newsletters, maybe that autobiography that you've been working on. They can make it all happen and make it look really professional. If you'd like to get pricing information, want to know more, you can reach them at 229-9335. That's 229-9335, and on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. All right, I ran across an interesting piece yesterday that I wanted to share some of it with you, because we're talking about the Islamic State, this terrorist organization that is growing of increasing concern with public policy leaders across really the world here. And what to do and what the strategy should be in combating this group. There's been actually a couple of different pieces that I think have been thought-provoking. One, questioning whether or not President Obama was right to rule out the idea of ground troops. As chief of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has been openly critical. I mean, it's really odd when you have those two, the president and the Joint Chiefs, at odds here, but the Joint Chiefs of Staff saying that it was really unwise of the president to preclude that as an option that you do not want in this kind of a situation to be telegraphing to your enemy. On the other hand, you could change your mind and change your strategy here. It seems really at the drop of a hat, right? We see it all the time. The other question, which is, I think, really an important question and an interesting question, is who do you try to back in this part of the world? And who exactly, how do you define a moderate in this part of the world? It was one of the questions that I thought was really interesting. And there's an op-ed piece. I want to share a couple of the portions of it with you that talks about this idea of who we should be dealing with and that we might be getting ourselves into one of these, the enemy of our enemy becomes our friend. So there was this piece by Ahmad Kaladi, who writes in the New York Times, that he talks about in order to crush ISIS, make a deal with Assad. But what I thought was maybe even more important than the point that he makes here to hook up with Assad was this whole idea of, you know, who the moderates are. So let me get into that part of this here. He writes the following. Last week, President Obama virtually declared war on the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. But he says it's hard to reconcile the seemingly urgent need to confront the threat posed by the organization with the chosen means of doing so. By opting to support, quote, the moderate Syrian opposition and running the risk of an open confrontation with the Assad regime, the West appears to be primarily appeasing Persian Gulf allies that have turned the overthrow of Mr. Assad into a policy fetish that runs against any rational calculation of how to defeat terrorism. the persistent belief in Western policy circles that there's a quote-unquote moderate opposition in Syria, reiterated at the close of a NATO summit in Wales, warrants serious scrutiny. The very notion of a vetted opposition has an absurd ring to it. It assumes that moderation is an identifiable, fixed element that can be sorted out from other tainted characteristics. It further presumes that the vetting process will not stain those being vetted. It's taken as a given that Western-backed opposition will prevail and, in turn, provide the basis for a happier and better Syria. He says there's little to support any of those beliefs. Let's go to Montpelier. Tom, how are you this morning?
Yeah, Mac, I hope to get in. Yep. All I can say is one word, and that's the Taliban, which we trained and armed to fight the Russians, and then ended up with a lot of our own weapons that we gave them, killing American soldiers in the last few years. So you can't trust any of them, I don't think, in the long run. Well, hey, you have a good weekend.
You too. That's true. And in Afghanistan, remember the Soviet Union and the quagmire that they got themselves into there. And we were supporting the other side in that. And then it came back to haunt us, like some of these seem to do. I mean, the idea here, we're talking now, in order to defeat this group that I was just talking about, we're talking about working with the leadership in Iran, where, I mean, you know, a year and a half ago, that would have been just an absurd proposition. Now, there is new leadership in Iran, but on the other hand, you know, we've been jawboning them about nuclear weapons, and now, you know, we're going to be turning to them potentially for help. I mean, this idea that somehow linking up with Assad is the way to get rid of this organization is, you know, again, I mean, rich in irony, to say the very least. But wow, I'll tell you, you want to talk about complicated stuff? This is complicated stuff. All right, we'll be down at Norwich on Monday. We'll kick off the week. We'll talk about cybersecurity. We'll also be talking about the future of the digital economy here in Vermont, all coming your way on the program next week. So we need you to rest up, too, and come back and join us same time, same place on the program on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier. News coming your way next.
AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. There's a lot of